listening to a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk. Number 426.
Hello and welcome back to the Outdoor Station. It's almost the last week of January 2017 as I record this, and it is a bitter cold day with one of those penetrating winds which just cuts through whatever technical fabric you're wearing. It's a far cry from the sunny, cheerful images which were displayed wall to wall around Olympia at the Adventure Travel Show last weekend. I popped along on the Saturday and arrived early at the conference venue to find it packed to the gills with potential adventurers who were all taking in the smorgasbord of thrills on offer. In fact, you couldn't go 6 inches without the word adventure, challenge or experience beaming down at you in big capital letters against an exotic backdrop of sea, sand or snow. As you might anticipate, the majority of stands were catering for those with deeper pockets. However, listener Bob Andrews had requested I find somewhere the pound was still worth something. And that was my challenge. And I'm pleased to say that I found some diamonds in amongst the rough, and one in particular shone through. But more of that later. It was also an opportunity to catch up with some familiar faces and old friends, and so these next 3 podcasts were all recorded at the Adventure Travel Show 2017. All the links for everything we discuss on the podcasts can, of course, be found over on theoutdoorstation.co.uk. Now, regular listeners will know, over the years, I've interviewed several people who have undertaken the Camino de Santiago. Their experience of the walk is always similar. However, the biggest area of discussion or dissatisfaction, I would say, was the accommodation. Sometimes it can be excellent, but they often describe the dorms similar to sleeping in a sardine tin, not very far away from your neighbour. Walkers of all ages undertake it, of course, but you may feel that a good night's rest is worth a few euros more. CaminoWays.com have 19 different pilgrim paths on their website. Andrea Velasco explains some of the benefits a few euros more give you.
Because of my own experience in some parts of the ways, I could say that the luggage transfer, transporting your luggage every day from hotel to hotel, is a big, big advantage for us. Like for the backpackers, it's kind of tough to go on your back with 10, 15 kilos of something for 30 days. So we transport that luggage every day. And also, when you get to the town, for example, in the Camino, I have the situation of my colleagues as well, that you get there around maybe 12, 1 p.m. and then you have to queue for 2 hours to get to the alberg or the hostel. So, we do an easier step there and we book it for you in advance. So, I think that's a big advantage as well with the breakfast. And also we provide dinners if you would like to. Because once that you get to the town, you're tired of walking 20 kilometers. So maybe you don't feel like looking for a place to have dinner, and we offer it already, or in the hotel or nearby.
A lot of our listeners are very, very keen walkers and backpackers.
Yeah.
So they're happy to walk the distances, and I can certainly see that having the accommodation booked in advance for them or sorted is obviously much nicer than some of the very claustrophobic hostels which can be very, very close. And I think you said earlier on that some of the rooms, or all of the rooms that you have in the smaller villages, are actually a private room with a private bathroom as well?
Yeah, all of them. We don't work in all the way. Like, it's just a private accommodation. For example, we work with single rooms and twin rooms. They have their own bathroom, each one. So, you have your privacy. I mean, for me, it means a lot, But, it really depends on the person. So, that would be, we provide a private room, a single room. You get there, you check in. And you get your luggage to your room. You don't have to share it with anyone else. So that's, I think that that's the big advantage of that.
Yeah. So it certainly saves the hassle factor of sorting all that out. Now, tell me about the routes that you represent, because I know it's not just the Camino Santiago. So you have a lot of other routes that you cater for.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the most popular one, obviously, is the French way from Saint John to Santiago, but we also have one that is very popular now, the Portuguese coastal way coming from Porto to Santiago. It goes through the coast on the first stage from Porto to Bayona, and the second section has, for example, 2 days on the coast. And then I'm from the beginning of the English way, from Ferrol, so you know, I always recommend that as well. It's a little bit more quieter route, you know, more for someone who looks to relax and not to see that many pilgrims on the way. Also, like the Northern Way from San Sebastian to Santiago, that's a quieter route all along the coast and seeing the landscape, the stunning landscape of mountains and the beach and most of the town. So it's something also because of the food. I really like it because the northern part of Spain have a different, you know, kind of food of the south. Like when you see it between the south and the north, it's really, really different.
So, but you also do, here we are now, the Camino Catalan across the northern part of Spain. You do in France, you do from Mont-Saint-Michel down to Sants, and Paris down to Saint-Jean-Pierre-de-Port.
Yeah, like for example, the Mont-Saint-Michel at the moment is not available, but we do the other ones, and definitely, I mean, it's a really different landscape, and we have people walking now, like the Geneva Way, for example, from Switzerland, or Lippi, which are quite a route. They are for people that is a little bit more experienced, maybe, if you like. And, you know, we recommend it for experienced hikers because they are not going to find no one in the way. They will have to be sure what they look for, you know?
Yeah, their actual route finding, sure. So to give people an idea of the sort of cost that we're talking about, because obviously cost is very important these days, especially in the UK at the moment with the pound. Tell me what the... give me an idea of some of the different routes, what sort of costs we're talking about.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for example, at the moment, for the standard one that we have, that is the one that we sell the most, is from Sarria to Santiago the last week. So it's between like 500 euros, 600 euros, depending if you are a solo traveler in a self-guided tour or in a group. If you would like to go on a guided tour, then it could be around 700 euros. You know, we include also English-speaking guide, airport transfers, depending on the time, you know, that kind of services. So for 7 days, accommodation, luggage transfer, breakfast and dinner, it's around, 600 euros maybe.
Okay.
Around roughly.
Yeah, sure. And the Portuguese one, can you give me an idea of that?
It is the standard one that everyone, like most of the people have time to do, is like seven nights always, accommodation, the minimum, well, not the minimum, kind of. So it could be around also 700 euros, more or less. Because it's 7 nights if you want to do the full section from Bayona to Santiago, for example, the most popular one on the Portuguese coastal way.
Was I right in hearing you say that you also do walks in Ireland as well?
Yeah, we do indeed. We have walks in all of the west coast, and also close to Dublin we have the Wicklow Way, which goes through the Wicklow Mountains, which are amazing. I've done a couple of walks there myself, and I really recommend for starting. And also we have in the countryside, following the river, the Barrow River. It's very, very nice as well. So we have all over Ireland, and if you would like to cycle, we have all the Wild Atlantic Way from Kinsale to Derry as well.
So do check out the outdoorstation.co.uk website for all the links, of course. Now, Dave Fowler, Colin Shaw and Sarah Jones all have one thing in common. In recent weeks, they joined the Outdoor Station newsletter sign-up, where you're able to suggest people, places and products you would like to hear more about. And they all asked if I could track down the incredibly busy Phoebe Smith, editor of Wanderlust magazine, freelance writer, but also author of numerous books, including one solely based around wild camping, entitled Extreme Sleeps, and a new release, The Book of the Bothy. I managed to catch up with her for a few moments in between her many seminars.
Extreme Sleeps came out, I think, about 4 years ago?
2013, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And how's that done as a book?
Really well, yeah. They've already reprinted it a couple of times. And I still get people emailing me about it now who've just sort of come across it and read it. The whole idea behind it was, obviously the title was slightly tongue-in-cheek, playing on the idea of a stationary activity like sleeping and making it extreme. But also because when it was all about how I my journey from becoming someone who's a normal person who likes to sleep in a normal bed on a mattress with a duvet, but now is a complete addict to sleeping wild in strange places. And the whole idea behind it was to show people that, you know, I'm not an athlete, I'm no one special, I'm just me, I'm just a normal person with a full-time job, and yet I can go and have these adventures and fit them in around my day-to-day life. And if I can do them, I want other people to do them. And it is really empowering. And going to these wild places, you know, finding somewhere, sleeping out on your own in the wild, it does so many things. It kind of resets your clock. It sort of makes you realise what's really important in the world. You know, I always say the best things in life aren't actually things, and I think being in the outdoors does that to you, makes you realise it. And it just gives you so much confidence to go out and do this. And it's no surprise that when I've become confident in the outdoors, it's kind of translated into my career as well.
I get the feeling it's very much wild camping is really coming of age almost. It's getting more and more publicity through social media. And as you say, it's empowering people more. But there is a journey, isn't there? There is a journey of confidence, as you clearly describe in your book. And I think it's a good introduction. In fact, it could be called an introduction to wild camping. And it's not men or women specifically. It can be that people are just very nervous about not having a cocoon around them.
Oh, definitely. And that's why I was surprised. Obviously, I didn't know who would buy it, who would want to know about it, who would want to read it, but I often find in the audience I get when I do talks and the feedback I get, it is actually, I'd say, about 60% male, 40% female, and they both identify with it, because I always say that the outdoors is the ultimate leveller. You know, the rocks, the trees, the mountains, they don't care whether you're a man or a woman, young, old, fat, thin, rich, poor, all that goes out the window. The outdoors is just the outdoors. And when you go there, it doesn't matter who you are. You can find something in that.
So looking at that particular book, how would you describe the beginning and the end as regards the experience at the time?
Well, for me, I start it when I was sort of over 10 years ago now, when I was not into camping, never liked to do it, maybe did it once as a child. And I went to Australia. And I went to Australia and a friend convinced me to go and sleep in a swag bag in the outback. And I didn't want to do it, but I did it because I was overseas. And when you travel, you tend to, you know, push your boundaries.
Yes, more.
Yeah, you do. You push your comfort zone. And so I did that there and had an amazing time. And I remember lying there thinking, I've never tried this back home. I've never gone and done this. Why? So I made a promise to myself then and there that when I got home, I'd try and be more of a tourist in my own backyard and start to explore my own country, as is what happens once you've been travelling for a while. And I did. And so throughout the book, it's kind of my journey of exploring parts of the UK I'd never bothered to visit, spending the night in them, because I think you connect when you sleep in a place and spend time in the outdoors. You connect with it and you see it in a different way, like without all the other people there, and it's just you, and you just have this much more, it's very difficult to describe, this connection with it. And then sort of by the end of the book, you've seen that I've kind of then re-fallen in love with the country that I'm from, and it's no longer about, you don't have to travel to the other side of the world to really sort of experience something amazing, like it's right there on your doorstep.
Well, Extreme Sleeps, we'll put the links to where you can obtain that from. Obviously, you can just Google it. You'll soon find it. They're around all over the place, which is good. And I really enjoyed the read myself. Now, I know you've done 7 books.
Yes, indeed, yes.
Which is incredible. And which is, well, obviously very good. I appreciate that. You've done 7 books. And another book that I'd like to just touch on is The Book of the Bothy. Now, I spoke to Ronald Turnbull, and we do a lot of bivvying together, we have done, and The Book of the Bivvy. But The Book of the Bothy, that seemed to come from nowhere.
Yeah, well, actually, funny enough, I came up with the idea in 2010, and I pitched it to several publishers, and they didn't want to know. They said there was no market for it, but I knew it was a really, really good idea, and I loved both these. I'd been staying in them for years, and I was such a fan of them, and a massive, you know, supporter of the Mountain Bothies Association, who look after them, you know, for free. You know, it's volunteer looked after. It's all charity. It's all been donated. That's how it's funded. And I just wanted to tell people about this story, about these huts, and these they tell such a story of the British Isles, really, and of the landscapes and the people who lived in these remote places, because that's what they all were. They were these buildings that people lived in or worked in, and they were there because you couldn't physically do that job without having somewhere to stay. And then, of course, with technology and advances in that and farming practices, they kind of weren't needed anymore, and they would have just been abandoned and left to kind of fall into disrepair, would it not have been for these for Bernard and Betty Heath, who started the MBA and started maintaining these buildings and building up a network of volunteers to maintain these buildings. And it's amazing, really, and it's so uniquely British that you can go into a wild place, spend the night for free in effectively an abandoned house with a fire, and you know, you can meet some amazing people there, and it's all for free, and it's all just run on trust. I think it's very uniquely British, and I just felt it was something that needed to be told. And so I wanted to write that book for so long to tell that story. I asked the MBA if it was okay back in 2010, and they said, yeah, absolutely, you can, you know, do whatever you'd like to do. So I did. And then it's been so really well received. You know, people had never heard of Bothies, or if they had, they didn't quite appreciate what they were. And so in that book, I chose 26 of my favourites that represented a really good geographical spread. And as well as being a good geographical spread, they also, different types of Bothies, so the bigger ones, the smaller ones, ones with stories behind them, the most haunted, you know, the highest, this sort of thing. Because I didn't want to give them all away. I could have done it like a catalogue, easily, of all the Bothies, because it's about 101, but it's going up every year. But I wanted it to be a jumping off point. I wanted it to be the first step that people would pick up to learn about the Bothies, to learn about the history, and then from that point on they would go off and explore and find them themselves. That's part of the joy of them.
So it's less of a guidebook, more of a an atmosphere about the character of each particular building.
Yeah, it's sort of a bit of both. I mean, each Bothy that I've mentioned, there's a map and a walking route in. Mm-hmm. I do the quickest way, the most direct way in, but then I also put an alternative option for people who are more experienced in the outdoors and, you know, want to make it more of a journey. And all the basics are there, you know, how big it is, where you get your water from. So it is guidebook in that respect. But then in each entry, I do a Bothy book entry, I call it, which is a little vignette, first-person experience of a night I spent there, just to try and give people a flavour of the experience. And I've had people coming up to me and telling me that they can't get out into the Bothies anymore, but for them it's like the next best thing, so that warms my heart.
Brilliant. Okay, so the final question has to be, talking about extreme sleeps and extreme and sleeping in wild places and sleeping in a Bothy, what's the preference?
Oh, God, that's asking me, like, what a favourite child would be. I love them all. You know, it really depends. And it's like all those things, isn't it? The last one you did was probably the best one. So I just came back from sleeping in Caror Bothy in the Cairngorms, and it was just so wonderfully remote. Met some amazing people. Snow all around. It was perfect. But ask me next weekend and it'll be a wild camp on the South Downs.
Every month, we're holding a special competition where you can win some fabulous outdoor gear. It's a great way to support the Outdoor Station. The more entries we get, the better the future prizes. During the month of January 2017, the prize is a top-of-the-range outdoor sleeping set. This includes the lightest three-season backpacking mat, the NeoAir X-Lite Regular, a luxurious 100% premium silk sleeping bag liner, and a practical lightweight pillow sack. The total weight of all these items is only 526 grams, and the combined value is £180. Simply answer the following question and text in your A, B or C answer before the closing date of the 31st of January, and you will be automatically entered. You can enter a maximum of 5 times from the same UK registered mobile phone number. So this month's question is, in the fairy tale Sleeping Beauty, the princess is brought back from the curse of endless sleep by a kiss from A, a frog, B, a donkey, or C, a prince.
To be in with a chance of winning, all you have to do is text OUTDOORS and your answer of A, B, or C to 82055, or post your answer with your name and contact phone number to Competition, The Outdoor Station, PO Box 924, Worcester WR4 4GB. Entries are open to anyone aged 16 plus and you must have the bill payer's permission. Texts cost £1 plus your standard network rate and the competition closes at the end of each month. Entries received after that date will not count, but you may still be charged. The winner will be contacted within 3 days of the competition closing and they may appear in future programmes. For full rules plus terms and conditions, please go to theoutdoorstation.co.uk/competitions.
You can find the direct links to Extreme Sleeps and the Book of the Bothy over on the Outdoor Station website. And if you haven't done so already, while you're there, do sign up to our newsletter page and make a few suggestions of your own. Now on to the gem I referred to at the beginning of the show. I love France. Rural France in particular. However, have you noticed that all the commercial campsites and places to pitch, as excellent as they normally are generally large and usually oversubscribed? HomeCamper.com could be about to offer the self-powered traveller a quiet, secluded, inexpensive alternative, offering pitches limited to a small number in the most interesting of rural places all around France. Had you heard about it? Well, I hadn't. Etienne de Gilbert tells us more.
So we started the company about 2 years ago?
2 years ago, and yes. And it's similar in its concept to Airbnb, except it's specialising in France.
Yeah, so it's similar to Airbnb in a way that is very social and so on, but it's dedicated to outdoor, so it's not only garden, it can be also lodge and, you know, cabin, so like tree houses and things like this.
How many people have you gathered now? How many places?
So we have about 500 destinations across France.
500 destinations in rural places across France,
yes.
And it offers everything from simple camping experience right through to lodges and swimming pools. And that,
yeah,
kind of
exactly,
thing.
Exactly. So what's interesting is that you get to know the locals and to engage with them. They will show you the good places around. Most of them will also try to offer you like breakfast with local food. There's also some fans of, for example, there's one guy that loves ballooning, so he can organize something for you. There's also a lot of people that likes cycling, so it's very quite many times near cycle lanes. As you may know, in France, we have along the rivers, along the Loire and the Seine, there are hundreds of kilometers of cycle lanes now. So it's like places with no cars, and you can enjoy with the kids, with the family, long rides. So we have plenty of those type of offers.
So obviously campers and cyclists and walkers, as well as people with caravans or motorhomes, can use the facilities. Now, how many people, or how many campers, should we say, are able to arrive at a place? Is it limited to a small number, or is it a large number?
Yeah, so in France, by law, you cannot have more than six, a group of six families. So you can have more than six pitches on a private land. So, but by in average, it's two or three pitches maximum. So it's really about having a personalized experience. So we don't have to. People want to avoid crowded campings, basically. So this is why they would choose our service.
Right. So it's a much simpler, much more quiet and peaceful way of traveling through France and camping. The name HomeCamper.com is new to me.
Yeah.
How do people go about looking at the content you've got? Go to the website, obviously. Okay. Do you have an app as well?
Yeah, so it's very easy. You go to homecamper.com on anything, so it can be on a PC, on a mobile phone, on a tablet. You just look there, and then if you put on search, it will look at all the gathers around you. So immediately you can search for something for today, for the next morning, and so on. So it's very reactive. We don't have a proper app at the moment. It doesn't really make sense for now because it's so responsive. And you can see the pictures, you can search by activities, by hobbies, or by services. And of course, all the prices are quite affordable as well, normally. And it's really about, you can also search by region. So if you want to plan something ahead of time, you can search, for example, for Dordogne or Ardèche or kayaking. And you can really make your search on a very intuitive way.
Excellent. And to give people an idea of prices, here we are in 2017. Approximately what would be looking at for, say, one person or two people with a small tent through to a camper van, something just approximately?
So today, on the first season, the average price was 15 euros per night for a complete family. So it's quite cheap. I mean, it's a one pitch, and it's all inclusive, like water and electricity, most of the case. Sometimes Wi-Fi and those kind of extra services. But you can have hosts that are going very beyond that, like proposing breakfast. A lot of them are proposing breakfast, also renting or offering bikes, or even, you know, swimming pools and those kind of extras. You can also have massage. You can also have, you know, it's very diverse, and it can really depend on the host willingness and passions.
So it sounds like the hosts are quite entrepreneurial in their range of interests themselves. You say massage and cycling and climbing. I notice you've got some pictures here of beautiful cabins in the snow.
Yeah,
hanging off the side of a cliff, literally on the side of a mountain. And beautiful water locations as well. And it's spread throughout France, or is it just down the main artery?
No, it's really throughout France. It's really about rural destination as well, so it's not so much into cities, of course. We have a few places that are a bit central, but typically it's about in the nature, in the countryside, by the sea, in the mountains. We are also very surprised there's a lot of people going in winter time outdoor, so it's also growing, and we are trying to answer this needs.
Okay, two questions. How many people did you have coming through the website last year actually using the service?
So it would really depend, but in summertime we will have up to 25,000 people connecting on a monthly basis to our website. And again, I mean, the platform was only up in May last year, so we have only gone through one season so far. So it's a really good response from the travelers, and we are trying to now go much further, and that's why also we are here today, to really get to know about our service in the UK and in the European countries. One interesting thing is that a lot of our first early adopters are foreigners, so it's also a good surprise for us.
Well, the green pound, as we call it, the green euro is really good for obviously the rural communities. So you're in France, but are you intending to spread it to Spain or Germany and further afield?
Yes, already this year, yes, for the next season, we will be in all the euro countries, so we will be only able to operate in euro currency. So that means that there will be gardens already in Spain, Italy, Portugal, Germany, and so basically southern Europe mainly. But we will have a few destinations, and our main of our activities is to grow the whole space, of course, to get more choices and more selections for our customers.
Well, I must congratulate you. I think it's a fantastic idea. It's been a long time coming to find something that really does look for the rural community, both offering the service as well as inviting people to the beautiful France. I love France. I'm a great fan of France. So many thanks indeed for your time, and I wish you all the best.
Yeah, thank you so much. And we look forward to welcoming you in France, and call us on our contact us on our website. We will be here to help you.
I've just checked out the homecamper.com website, and once you find the Anglais, English button, the range of camping options look fantastic. If I was cycling through France this year, it would be the first place I would look. My thanks to Andrea Velasco, Phoebe Smith and Etienne de Gilbert for taking the time during a very busy adventure travel show. There's two more to come from the show, so make sure you drop by next week to hear more. Until next time, folks, stay warm, stay safe, and stay happy. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear more from our extensive free library, please visit the website at theoutdoorstation.co.uk.
You can now follow The Outdoor Station on Facebook, where we chat about each programme we produce, answer questions, and discuss future productions. Why not join us there?
This podcast is produced and hosted by theoutdoorstation.co.uk.